I just grab my bucket and we walk around, and when I see a weed, stop and pull it. You know, we are low tech when it comes to fighting weeds. Diz Runs Radio episode 1234 starts in 3, 2. Welcome back to Diz Runs Radio, where I talk with runners from all corners of the running world about running, life, and everything in between. I'm your host, Denny Cray, and it's just about time to head out the door for an easy run and a great conversation. So if you're ready, then I'm ready. Let's get started. Hey, y'all, real quick before we get to your Q's, my A's, and who knows what other nonsense is going to spill out over the course of, I don't know, what do we got today? An hour, hour and a half, something like that? I don't know. It'll go as long as it goes, as it always does. You know as well as I do that running is a mental sport, right? Obviously, there's a physical component, but how many times have we heard people talk about the mental piece of the puzzle? How many times have I talked about the mental piece of the puzzle? Lord knows, more than a few. And one thing I've been using lately to kind of help get locked in on the mental side of my training, and even the half marathon that I ran just recently, is Magic Mind. And I've talked about Magic Mind before. Great for focus, great for a little bit of extra energy. But definitely something that I wouldn't have thought would have been a good running. I wouldn't have thought at first would have a lot of benefit for running. I use it almost every day for focus during the workday. But definitely have noticed a difference before long runs, before key workouts, and again, before a little half marathon this past weekend, where not for nothing, things went really well, in large part because I was locked in mentally. And again, kind of some of those parts of a race for a half marathon, for me at least, you know, between mile 7 and 11, like, you know, you're going and it's hard and you're trying to hold it. And, you know, I have a history of kind of fading a little bit there because just mentally the focus dips and the pace drops, and then you're scrambling to try to get back to it in the last couple few miles. And the same thing in the marathon, you know, between like mile 14, 15 and 20, 21, 22, maybe even, it's just tough. And, you know, thanks to the Magic Mind, again, you know, it's not something that instantaneously I notice it, but the more I take it consistently, the more I just notice that I'm locked in mentally, workouts, races, and at work as well. So if you haven't tried Magic Mind yet, I would encourage you to do so. Definitely worth the plunge. And we got a little coupon code to save you 20% as well. So head over to magicmind.com/dizruns. That's the link so that they know you came from the show. And then make sure you use the code DIZRUNS20, all one word, DIZRUNS, and then the number 20 at checkout. That'll save you 20% on a one-off order or up to 56% off of a subscription. So it's 20% on top of whatever subscription discounts are also involved. Different levels of subscription get different levels of discount, but 20% on top of that, up to 56% off. So check it out if you haven't done so already. Thank me later. And you won't forget to thank me because you'll be so locked in mentally, so focused, and just good to go that you'll be like, oh yeah, I need to thank this guy for telling me about Magic Mind. So magicmind.com/dizruns, dizruns 20 at checkout to save yourself 20% up to, at minimum, up to 56% on certain levels of subscriptions. So today, like I said earlier, a little Q, little A, it is time for the monthly listener Q&A episode of the show where you ask, I answer, and tomfoolery tends to devolve at some point. This is likely going to devolve right from the beginning all the way through the end, because, you know, that's how we operate around here. But if you haven't heard one of these episodes before, we do this every month, the last Friday of every month. And if you have questions, if you want to get your questions asked in future episodes, which means you'll also get your questions answered in future episodes, you can send them to me any old which way you want. But the best bet is to join the Facebook group, dizruns.com/Facebook, or just search for the Dizruns Tribe next time you're trolling around on the book faces. And ask to join. We'll let you in. And somewhere middle of the month, I put out a post that says, what are your questions? You put your questions in the comments, bada boom, bada bam, via the magic of, I don't know, social media, of modern technologies. Your questions become answers, or your questions are asked, answers become the content, And that's how we get to where we are today. So first question or first couple of questions coming from my man, Lewis. And I don't think I'll make the same mistake I made last month where I just dismiss a question and then have to come back and make a whole other quick tip out of it. Although I don't know. We'll see. We don't know what the future holds. Maybe I will. But first question from Lewis, what are your thoughts about the Boston Marathon in particular? 44-year-old Edna Kiplagat from Kenya placing third overall for the women. I mean, Edna, whatever, she's a beast, you know, elite's going to elite, you know, she's a strong runner. It doesn't matter if she's 44 or not. She had a good day. Good for her. As far as the race itself, I didn't get to watch it as closely as I normally would. Various bits and bobs and things of that nature. I got confused about what time the race started and, you know, it was just a whole thing. But I thought it was I wrote an email about this. Maybe some of you have heard me talk about this a little bit already, but I thought it was a really great, both the men's race and the women's race, right? Both the men's race and the women's race were very good examples of different ways to successfully race to win. Yet neither of which I think would be considered good examples of how to race when you're racing against yourself, when you're racing to try to get the best performance you can on the clock. I think they were good in terms of placement races. You know, for the men, the guy that just takes off, right? And kind of like what Meb did back in 2014, where it was just like, I'm just going to go. And everybody's like, oh, he'll fall back to us eventually. And by the time they realize that maybe he's not falling back to them, and they start to try to track him down, and the other men were, you know, catching up to him a little bit this year. They just run out of race course, right? Like, he made his move. They sat. They thought he would fade, like we've seen so often. You know, the guy that the last couple few years that kind of took off and, you know, was crushing the race all the way to like mile 20, 21, and then he fades and then gets, you know, he ends up in 10th place. You know, they just assume that's going to happen again this year, right? But this guy, you know, he took a shot. He took a shot in. Paid off and he wins. Not the most strategic way to run a race, again, to try to get the best time for yourself. But hey, when you're an elite running the Boston Marathon, doesn't matter if it takes you 2 hours and 2 minutes or 2 hours and 40 minutes. I mean, not that it's going to take any of those elites 2 hours and 40 minutes, but the clock doesn't matter, right? It's all about who finishes first. He took a shot and he was rewarded. As far as the women's race, you know, the complete opposite. It's the sit and kick. And what was it? It was like a pack of like 18 women, you know, with whatever there was, with at least at mile 20, maybe it was at 21, 22. And then all of a sudden in the span of like a mile, it felt like it went from 18 or 20 women to like, you know, it was down to 11 and then it was down to 5 and then it was down to 3. Right. So it was just a sit and kick race. It was obviously not an aggressive pace. Nobody was willing to take that risk, which for the women like Edna and you know, the ladies that won, they trusted their finishing speed, obviously. So they were fine with not making it an honest pace from the beginning. Which again, it's a great strategy if you trust yourself to kick and win at the end. Not so great if your plan is to try to PR, you know, or aim for a big time goal. You know, yes, you want to finish faster, but you also can't just run at a casual pace, which I know it's ridiculous to think of their casual pace at whatever it was, you know, 5 minute pace or 5:20 or something like that is casual pace, but it's a casual pace for them. And then, you know, kick it into gear at the end. So I thought it was an interesting, you know, two different, very distinct strategies. Great drama, great finishes in both races, you know, were the chase pack of the men going to catch him? You know, no, but it was, you know, if there would have been a 27 and a half mile race, yes. For the women, you know, when were they going to make their move and, you know, make the move too early, et cetera. But the chase to the finish line, I thought they were both great races. And, you know, as always, the one race a year that I watch, even though I didn't watch it as close as I would have liked to, I thought it was a good day. Of watching the elites for sure. Serious training question from Lewis. What are some great reminders/tips for summer training and racing? So many that I'm not going to go into all of them here. You can go back in the archives, look for heat issue, heat illness episodes. But I think the big one, you know, the big thing is that heat doesn't discriminate, right? And this isn't just for the Southern folk. And in fact, and I know I've said this before in years past, I think the Southern folk, not that they're more immune to the heat, but because they expect it. You know, even early in the year when it's, you know, it's just getting to be dead on summer in Texas and Florida and Arizona and some of the places, Even though maybe they're even here in Georgia, not quite acclimated to the heat yet. But the random hot days, you're just like, all right, yeah, you know, it's going to be a thing. But when you get that hot day in the Midwest, in New England, in places where, you know, it might only be really hot for a week, but when it's really hot, it's really hot. I think some of you northern folk don't respect the heat maybe as much as you should. So that's my biggest reminder is don't take the heat for granted. The heat is a thing. And while I'm not one to say, you know, just throw your hands up and resign yourself to just miserable runs because it's hot, you know, especially if you have like a 5K race, something like that. Sure, it might be hot. It might be not exactly PR weather, but you can still race hard if you've trained, and especially, you know, if you've been running through the summer a little bit. You know, you can still race pretty hard even on an unseasonably hot and humid day. Lord knows, done that in Florida many a time. Maybe not get your best out of yourself, but you can still push yourself, right? But at the same time, you need to be aware that, like, you know, don't do anything foolish, right? None of these races that any of y'all are running this summer are worth ending up, you know, in the ER, and certainly not worth ending up in the morgue about, right? Like the local 5K, not worth it, right? Like, race it hard, whatever, have fun with it. The local trail half marathon, have fun with it, push yourself, but not to the expense of really putting your health in danger. If it's really hot, you know, still run, but make sure you're taking plenty of fluids and replacing electrolytes and all those types of things, slowing down, walking some. Don't take chances with the heat, because that junk is serious. And it can come out of nowhere, and it can come in Canada. You know, Walker, be careful. Make sure you're doing the right I mean, I guess you're going to be reading Celsius temperatures, but don't be, you know, when I'm like, oh, you know, whatever, it's 75 degrees, obviously it's, you know, whatever that is for you guys. What is that in Canada? 30 degrees, something like that. 28 degrees, like, it's pretty warm, right? So be careful up there. Be careful wherever you are when it comes to the heat. Don't play chicken with heat illness. Cause that, again, I know we like to joke around. I like to joke around with your questions, Lewis, but this is a serious one. Respect the heat index. Listen to your body. Cut a run short. Get up early to try to beat the heat. Whatever you got to do, don't mess around with heat illness. Last but not least from Lewis, what do you do when the local trail that you run on is packed full of people? I mean, go to another trail, bro. Like, that's an easy one. Like, you know, sure, you might like that trail and you might be a little bit, you know, feel like you have a little sense of ownership. Don't be a douche, right? Like the tourists are in town, or some of the more... you know, fair weather runners, maybe Thessaly's getting off her treadmill. Nah, we know Thessaly's not getting off her treadmill, but maybe somebody that tends to run on the treadmill is like, hey, it's finally, you know, summertime. I'm going to head outside and hit the trails a little bit. Hey, you know, welcome them. And if it's too, you know, if it's too crowded for you, freaking go somewhere else. This ain't rocket science. You know, it's like going to the gym in January, right? You can complain about all the people that are, you know, New Year's resolution folks, or you can say, hey, that's awesome that they're doing something for their health and it's going to be mildly inconvenient to me for a little bit. But maybe, just maybe, we hope that your trail is packed all year, because that means that more people are in the local running community. Maybe be able to meet some new, you know, running friends, start up a running group, things like that. And if not, then, you know, as it dies down, as the tourist season, you know, goes away, as fall comes, you'll get your trail back. Right. So, either deal with the people or go somewhere else for a little while. But one way or the other, just be cool to the new folks, because, you know, we were all new folks once. You were a new guy invading somebody else's trail at one point. So just keep that in mind. Keep that in mind. But thanks for the questions, my friend. Next up, speaking of the Pacific Northwest's treadmill princess, Thessaly asks, sorry in advance, since I'm pretty sure this question... or this is a question that you've done a podcast QT on or answered in Q&A in some form, but she's going to ask it again because why not? No apologies necessary, Miss Thessaly. Here we go. What's the question? What do you do to better mitigate painful black toenails and random blisters? One would think I shouldn't ever get another foot problem, but alas, I am foot problem prone. Try saying that 10 times fast. It totally could be because I rotate between 10 pairs of shoes in any given month, but I'm just curious how you advise runners who are more likely to have a blister or bad toenail experience. So, I hate to say this, Thessaly, because it's probably going to sound like I'm rubbing salt in the old proverbial torn up wounds on your feet. But I've never had a black toenail. Never once have I had a black toenail. Have I had a couple blisters on my feet? Of course. Yeah, we've had a couple of those. But as far as black toenails, never a one. And I think it's because I think that there's a lot of evidence to support this. It's a shoe issue, especially the black toenails are a shoe issue most of the time. And without getting too high hoity and toity about foot shaped toe boxes and wider shoes and things of that nature. Having a little bit more space in the front part of your shoe to allow your feet to spread out or your toes to splay, makes a big difference. It keeps the tips of your toes, the tops of your toes from getting bunched together, from rubbing on the top of the shoe. So I think the answer is to either, to examine your shoes. If you got 10 different shoes that you're rotating through, examine maybe stepping up a half size, just to give your feet a little bit more space. And if you feel like your foot's sliding around a little bit, then you can look at some of the lacing techniques to try to, do like the heel lock technique, and just Google it if you're not familiar with what that is, but to kind of help keep your foot in place, but to give your feet a little bit more space in the toe box area. And that might just cut down on a fair bit, if not completely cut down on the toenail issue. As far as blisters, I mean, it's a friction issue as well, but obviously instead of it being on the toe, it's more of along the sides of the toes. If it's between the toes, it could be again a shoe issue of your shoes kind of squishing your toes together, so they're rubbing on each other more than if you had a little bit more space, they might could spread out and they'd stop rubbing that way. If it's on like the outer part or the inner part, the side of your big toe, it's probably from rubbing against the side of your shoe. And again, maybe a little bit more space could help. But what I do, cause I will get a blister there every once in a while, but I also usually have a pretty good callus there, is it's just a little bit of foot care, right? Like, and I'm not going to go to I don't go get pedicures or anything like that. Nothing against it. It's just not my jam. There's nothing about going and sitting in the pedicure office, sounds relaxing or self-care to me. But I've got like a callus shaver and I've got a few different tools along those lines, that I just, kind of keep an eye on things. And if I notice it rubbing, or if I just kind of see that the callus is getting a little bit intense, we get the shaver down there, trim it off, and then get the more like the pumice stone type of thing, smooth the edges, and we're good to go. So, sometimes some of that just kind of like not getting rid of the callus completely, because the callus is there to protect you from the blisters. But if it gets too big, then it can rub underneath. You get the blister under the callus. It's a whole thing. So just a little bit of that preventative care on the feet, whether you go to the pedicure place and pay for it, whether you just DIY at the house as well. But those types of things can help. But look at your shoes. Even with 10 shoes, if they're all the same size and they're all a little bit too tight, they got like, if they're a Brooks, and nothing against Brooks. I've worn Brooks before, but they're a little pointy in the toe. And they're not the only, Brooks aren't the only one, right? But if they're a little pointy in the toe, that could be part of your problem as well. Another question from Tessa, a little bit more fun. Bloomsday is coming up on the first Sunday of May. Spokane, Washington's 12K race started by Olympian Don Cardong. What is your favorite non-traditional race distance? So, this is a tough one, cause I don't know that I have a real not like, does 10 mile count? If 10 miles counts, that's it. Like the 10 mile race is like perfect. Like that's a perfect distance. If it doesn't count, then I don't think I've ever run a non-traditional race other than, the various 50 50K races that I don't think I've ever run one that was exactly 31 miles. I think I maybe had one that was close, but those are all over the place. But otherwise, I ran 45 miles, I guess, but like in terms of like shorter, funky, I've never run like an 8K, never run, a 12K, never had, try not to run any 5Ks, but I have run one of those in the past and run a couple 10Ks. I like a 10 mile though, and there's not a lot of those. So I feel like that might count. Maybe it's not a non-traditional distance, but it's a hard to find race distance, at least in the places that I've lived. And I enjoy 10 miles. So if you'll allow that as a non-traditional distance, I will plant my flag as that is my favorite non-traditional distance to race. But thank you for the questions. Hope the treadmill is treating you well. Maybe, while we're on the subject, maybe the treadmill is your toenail problem. Maybe if you got off the treadmill, you'd have less black toenails. I have no reason to suspect that that's actually true, but that just gives me one more chance to dig at your treadmill habit, Thessaly. So get outside, enjoy the great outdoors with your runs, and report back on if whether or not that means you have zero toenail issues until you jump back on the treadmill sometime in the fall. We'll see. It's like a real life science experiment. That's my hypothesis. It's up to you to test it, and we'll play the scientific method game. Anyway, thanks, lady. Hope all is well, and hope the recovery from Boston is going smoothly. Next up, from Mr. Rob Jones, how is the yard? What methods do you use to fight weeds? What's in the garden this year? So some non-running questions from my man, Mr. Jones. The yard is still waking up. We are not fully green. We are not seriously growing just yet, but it feels close. I'm ready for it to go. I've been mowing it a couple times a week. Not getting much out of the mowing, but we're just trying to spur things along here a little bit. Probably should have scalped it a little bit harder, but with I have a reel mower, not R-E-A-L, but R-E-E-L, you know, like a push mower with the reel on it. It's hard to scalp with that joker. But with Bermuda grass, apparently you're supposed to scalp it every year, really knock it down, and that helps disperse some of the regrowth. So, you know, just got to wait for it to warm up a little bit more. We're starting to get there. We had a little cold snap the last couple days, but hopefully, I think summer is knocking on the door. I think solid spring is here, and trusting that means that the grass is going to start to green up pretty soon. But we're in the process of aerating. You know, who knew? You, all y'all that don't care about your yard, you're getting all the yard talk, at least for the next couple of minutes. But I'm in the process of aerating right now. Gonna get some dirt and do some leveling soon. Throw some fertilizer on it around the 1st of May, and hopefully it won't be too long after that we'll be nice and green and growing well. What methods do you use to fight the weeds in the yard? I have a bucket, Rob, and it's like a 5-gallon bucket, and I just pull weeds all year and drop them in the bucket. When the bucket fills up, we dump it out, and we start again. But I'll put a little bit of weed stuff on once in a while, but I try not to go too crazy with, the chemicals in the yard, you know, even including fertilizer. I mean, I do fertilize, but, I try not to go too crazy because I'm out there bare feet throwing the ball to the dog. She's out there rolling around. Both dogs are out there rolling around in the grass, and the one dog's chasing the ball and eating the ball. And of course the ball's rolling through the grass with, you know, so we're just trying to limit the toxicity that we all might pick up between, you know, Addison's out running around bare feet, things like that as well. So, I might put a little bit of something on, kind of like a pre-emergent, you know, something that's going to try to keep things at bay for a while. But then I just have my bucket. And when I'm throwing the ball and the dog decides she wants to lay in the grass and chew on the ball a little bit, I just grab my bucket and we walk around. And when I see a weed, we stop and pull it. We are low tech when it comes to fighting weeds. My neighbor makes fun of me for my bucket, but I tell him he needs a bucket too, because he's got some weeds in his yard. If everybody had a bucket, they would not have weeds. Provided you use the bucket, of course. But that's how I fight the weeds. What's in the garden this year? So we got a mix of things in the garden at current. We've got radishes growing. We've got some yellow squash. We've got some zucchini going. I think my zucchini might not have made the transplant. We might have to replant the zucchini. We got some spaghetti squash going. We got cucumbers that are going to be added to the garden soon. Got some peppers, but I don't think they're going to make it to the garden. I think the peppers are going to be in pots on the back porch. Tomatoes going to be in pots on the back porch. I think that's it for now. I think that'll be a pretty good garden. Pretty good garden. Hopefully, we get some produce this year. But I'm feeling confident. Just a little bit bummed about the zucchini transplant situation. In fact, might go ahead and plant a couple more this weekend. Just plant some seeds in the garden, and if the transplants rally, then we can just pluck the seeds as they start to grow. And if they don't, then hopefully we'll get the seeds popping up, germinating soon, and not be falling too far behind the growing season. We got a pretty good growing season, so we'll be good. We'll be good. But I'll keep you posted on the yard, Rob. And for everybody that's been eyes glazed over, let's get back to non-green thumb related questions, at least for now. But thanks for the questions, my friend. Next up from Cece, suggestions on electrolyte replacements and water intake during a run 20 miles or longer. I love Element electrolyte salts, but my stomach does not like them during a long run. Someone mentioned salt tablets. Point is, I sweat a bit at the end of a longer run. I can literally scrape the salt off my skin. Element is great before and after, but doesn't work for me during a run. Great question. And certainly, again, you know, kind of going back to Lewis's question about things to keep up with in the summertime, certainly electrolytes and replacing your salts is an important piece of the puzzle. And there's nothing, you know, we all sweat. We all have different levels of you know, just sweat production in terms of volume of sweat. And we also all have different levels of salt that's in our sweat, right? And so it sounds like you're a little bit saltier sweater, which is nothing you can do about that. But certainly something to be aware of in terms of how to replace it. So, you know, if you can hit the Element before a run, after a run, that's great. As far as during a run, some things, yeah, you can definitely, there's different salt tablets, there's salt pills. Those may work very well for you. You may try some other options besides Element and just see if there's some other ingredient in it that works well for you, whether it's precision hydration. They have different levels and different salt concentrations for saltier sweaters. So that could be a good one to look at. Noon, of course, lots of people use Noon. But one thing that I do, and your mileage may vary on this, but if there's something in the Element that's in the flavor profile or, you know, one of those flavoring ingredients that causes your stomach issues, you might struggle with a Noon. You might struggle with a Precision. What I do is when I fill up my water bottle just during the day, when I fill up my water bottle, you know, for a long run, I literally take the salt shaker and you know, I mean, not tons, right? But put a couple shakes of salt in my water bottle. Not enough to make it feel like I'm drinking from the ocean, but it definitely, like, it does change the flavor, right? There is a little bit of a salty flavor to it, but I use that to help replace, you know, and then I actually also put a little bit of powdered vitamin C in, so it's got a little tang to it as well. But, you know, you could play with something like that, you know, instead of looking at proper products, just straight up salt, right? Just enough to that, again, it doesn't make it unpalatable, but it keeps you from just drinking just water and not replacing any salt, which then, you know, as you're sweating out and your volume of salt in your sweat seems to be high, you know, you're replacing some of it. So it kind of maintains some of that electrolyte balance in your system. And then after the run, then maybe you hit your Element or something like that to bring a little bit more sodium and potassium and all the different salts back into the mix. So, like a lot of things, especially when it relates to fuel during a run, electrolytes, not technically fuel, but certainly an additive that you need to be aware of. A little bit of trial and error is required, right? So try some different things and see what works for you, whether it's different products. There's, like I said, you mentioned salt tablets. That's certainly one that you could try where you just swallow the pill beforehand and then you can just drink your normal water, but the salt gets released from the tablet. So that can work, and there's no taste issues, things like that. You just got to figure out what works well for you. Since you figured out already that the Element doesn't work on your stomach, find the right product that does. But definitely make sure you're replacing the electrolytes. Sounds like you need it, and you might need a lot. So you maybe have to mix and match a couple different things. Maybe it's a little bit of salt in the bottle, plus a salt tab, just to make sure that you're staying relatively balanced. And after the run, you know, it'll balance itself out more naturally. So good luck, and certainly keep up pumping that hydration and the salt, and hopefully you'll find the right mix for you this summer. Next up from Melody, she says, you've organized a good running group in your neighborhood. I was wondering how it works. Logistics of having people running at different paces. Where do you run, roads or trails? Do you aim for specific distances, or is it time-based? How often do you meet, et cetera, et cetera? So yes, we do have a neighborhood group run that I started just a little over a year ago. You flatter me by saying it's a good group. I mean, it's a good group, but it's a small group, right? But I think this is one of those where don't overthink it, right? Like whether you're asking because you're thinking about trying to put something together, Melody, or just anybody else, you know, I didn't reach out for, you know, ask for a bunch of questions, you know, who would be interested, yada, 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 things like that. Like I just did it, right? So we've got a little, you know, a Facebook group for the neighborhood. So I just put a post up there that said, is anybody interested, going to do this, you know, going to make this happen. And a handful of people said they were interested. So then I tagged them in like the next post just to make sure that people saw it. But ultimately I picked a day, right, that was convenient for me. Picked a time that was convenient for me. Actually, I picked two times. So we do two runs. We do a 5:45 and an 8:30 in the morning on Thursdays. And it actually started out at 6, but then one lady who ran the first couple was like, hey, could we, any chance we could move this up like to 5:45? It'd be just a little bit easier for me to finish the run and get to work on time. And I was like, sure. You know, like it hadn't really picked up a lot of steam yet. And I figured if somebody was going to come at 6, they could come at 5:45, right? If they weren't going to come at 5:45, they probably weren't going to come at 6 anyway. So we bumped it up, but I just tried to make it as simple as possible for people in our neighborhood. So kind of the pool is relatively centrally located in our neighborhood. So I said, we'll meet at the pool. That way it's not in front of anybody's house. Nobody feels sketchy about, you know, inviting everybody. Like, we're not going to do it in front of my house, or everybody's got to get to my house, whatever. Like, it's the pool. People can drive there. They can ride their bike there, whatever. The parking lot. Centrally located. Most people run, you know, run there. No matter where they're coming from in the neighborhood, they can run to the pool. Then I mapped out, I did a route, right? I was like, you know, what's worth people getting up for in my mind, but not so much that somebody who's maybe a little bit newer is going to be like, oh God, I can't do an 8 mile, you know, run before work. So I mapped out a route, that I think it's like 3 miles or 3.5 miles, something like that from the start finish at the pool. Then of course you can add on, you know, to get to your house and back or things like that. And then I just put it out there. Said, this is what time we meet. I try to remember to put a post up every week to just remind everybody in the neighborhood. I think most people are pretty well familiar with it. I'm a little bit, I don't want to say famous. I'm known for my memes. I try to create some type of meme to go with the post, because otherwise, you know, it just catches people's attention, right? To get them to see the post. And then we just show up, you know, and when we have different people at different paces, it really isn't that, like, so far it hasn't been that much of an issue. But if we do have somebody who's definitely either faster or slower than the group, if they're faster, they're welcome to stay with us, or they can just, you know, they can meet up with the group at the start and then they can take off on their run. That's fine. And if they're slower, my policy is that they don't run by themselves. So I'll fall back, or if somebody else wants to fall back and keep them company. And you know, so far it's been very rare that the whole group hasn't just fallen back. But there's been a couple times where, you know, somebody's like, oh, I need a little walk break. Hey, cool. No factor. Everybody else keeps going and I'll slow down. We walk for a little bit. We run a little bit again. But you know, to me, it's a group run, so I'm not worried about, you know, some type of quality workout for me. Like it's just an easy day. If somebody wants to go too fast for me, then I just let them go. And if somebody's going slower than I would normally go, then hey, we'll walk a little bit. We'll slow down, whatever. No factor. Trying to keep it social, trying to keep it fun. And again, it's just kind of worked out. The 5:45 is pretty popular. We usually have somewhere in the neighborhood of myself and Rebecca. And then there's another couple that is there most weeks. There's a guy and his son is in high school. They both tend to come. And then there's a couple other, folks that we see fairly regularly. So there's usually, you know, out of that mix of 7-8 people, there's usually like at least 5 of us that make it every week. Sometimes it's me and Rebecca. We have our own little date run. Sometimes it's the full crew. We have 7, 8, 9 people there. The 8:30 used to have a couple people that were pretty regular. I've been running that by myself a lot more recently. But it's just, you know, it just kind of ebbs and flows. And hopefully maybe we get to the summer, we'll get a few more folks that maybe don't have to get the kids out the door for school. So maybe they can join us, bring the kids with them, you know, bring the stroller. I'll push the stroller, whatever. But we just try to make it as open to anybody that wants to come as possible. Of course, you have plenty of people going, oh, I wish I could, but I'm just not fast enough to keep up. And I just, like, I wish I could figure out the way to tell them that you'll be fine. You'll be fine. Like, we'll slow down for you. It doesn't matter. But you know, people are whatever. If they're, I don't want to say that they're intimidated, but like, you know, until you come and experience it and we're like, oh yeah, they really do slow down for me. Like they don't want to be out there by themselves. Right. So we're just trying to figure out still the best way to make it as welcoming as possible. But, it's been fun and certainly I've gotten to know some folks in the neighborhood that definitely wouldn't have gotten to know otherwise because they don't live right, you know, right here in the couple houses by us. So it's been cool. It's been cool. And hopefully, you know, it'll pick up steam in year two. Not that I'm unhappy with it being, you know, 6, 8, 10 of us, you know, typically for the 5:45 group. But would love to have, you know, 25, 30 people spread out between the two different groups. And really, and at that point, then it is going to start to stretch out, right? You're going to have more folks at different paces. And so we all start together and there'll be the faster group and the main group and the slower group. And it all kinds of spreads out. And maybe the slower group, you know, skips this little out and back section. And so we still all kind of finish at the same time, but maybe the faster group runs a little extra section of one part of the neighborhood to get an extra mile in. And we all still kind of finish at the same time. We start at the same time, but maybe the route looks, if you're going to do some type of group like this, I don't think you can micromanage it too much. I think you need to allow it to evolve as it evolves, right? And maybe it stays like it is now forever. Maybe it stays with just the same 6 or 8, 10 people. But hopefully we'll get some more folks in and that'll create some more friendships throughout the neighborhood. And, I think it's a cool thing, to just have a little group run once a week. And if I don't think it would ever be something that becomes more than once a week as far as official. But, you know, like maybe then that it breeds something to where, you know, there's a couple folks that are like, hey, you know, you also want to run on Monday morning? Sure. Cool. Who knows? We'll see how it unfolds. But so far it's been pretty cool and got to, you know, I don't really like people, but I like runners. So it's allowed me to meet some folks in the neighborhood. And I think that's been a good thing too. So glad that I took the plunge and put a post up and said, hey, do you want to do this? And glad that some folks have shown up and hopefully we'll get some more. So if you decide to do something like that, Melody, let me know. I'd love to hear how it goes for you. And you know, there are plenty of weeks when I just run by myself, especially in the early days. And I still do with the 8:30, but you know, you can't let that get you down, right? Like you just, hey, you know, keep every time I see somebody out running, I'm not annoying with it, but, I have done a little bit more Strava stalking of people in the neighborhood and been like, hey, why don't you come join our group run? Haven't gotten anywhere with it yet, but we'll see. Anyway, thanks for the question, lady. Hope things are well. Next up, we got a couple from Miss Michaela. First one, any advice for someone who sets goals but doesn't really want to do the work to achieve them? No, because I am one of those people. Maybe not so much with the running goals, although maybe a little bit. I mean, like I set goals for you know, running 50 states, right? I set goals for running Boston. But when is the last time I crossed a state off the list? It's the before times. It was 2019. It's been 5 years since I've run a marathon in a different state. So it's like I'm doing the work. I'm doing the training, but I'm not like actually taking steps towards moving towards my goals. So I don't know. I mean, you know, it's obviously there's different levels to that. There's different, you know, whether it's just actually getting out and getting the miles in, whether it's, you know, whatever type of goals you might have to take the action. It's not easy. And we all have different, I think most of us have different areas where we struggle. Maybe we're quick to start, but we don't stick with it as much. Maybe we would stick with it if we get going, but it's hard to get going. I think that the big thing is to not give up, right? Not beat yourself up too much because, if you stop setting the goals, if you stop having the ambition, you're never going to find the follow through. So hopefully, you know, you keep setting goals. And if you don't take the actions that are necessary, well, then how can we pivot? How can we set a new goal? Keep trying to find the right mix of, you know, is it, do I need more structure? Do I need less structure? Do I need, some wiggle room, but you know, a loose framework, but not be oppressive with the structure. Do I need, you know, if it's a running goal, do I set distance targets? Do I set time targets? Do I set, you know, like I've done with the, mobility and soft tissue work this year, just setting the goal of doing something in each of those categories, every day. So there's been plenty of days where I've done, you know, pretty good 10, 15, 20 minutes of stretching and foam rolling and things of that nature. There's been plenty of times where it's been 30 seconds of each just to tick the box. But because I've allowed myself to have that very minimal, almost insignificant amount of action that counts as ticking the box. Yes, I have at times let myself off the hook and been like, oh, I'll just, you know, stretch down to my toes. And there it counts as mobility work, which is pretty pathetic. But more often than not, like I do get something halfway decent done. So again, maybe it's changing what your metric for success is so that even on the days that you're not doing tons of work, you feel like you're not taking a zero day. But it's tough and it's something where I think that, it's almost Sisyphusian in that you might never get it perfect, but as long as you keep trying, as long as you keep dedicating yourself to trying to put the work in, to try to put the effort in, even if you don't get the rock all the way up the hill, you know, and you're always starting back from scratch, and starting again, As long as you're continuing to do the work, progress is hopefully being made and moving you closer to the goal, even if it's not always playing itself out the way you want it to. So I don't know if there's any advice in there, but that was as much for me as it was for you. So hopefully it helps you a little bit. Maybe it might help me a little bit as well. Another question from Michaela. Ever entertain the idea of running another marathon on a charity bib? Yeah, absolutely. I just need to sign up for a marathon first, right? I was actually, though, in all honesty, I was kind of sort of thinking about maybe making a Disney return in 2025, doing the Goofy Challenge again, and whether it was for Team and Training or a different charity, but probably doing it as with a charity bib. And then they screwed the pooch by shortening the half marathon to a 6-mile race because it was raining. And I was just like, come on, Disney, like, do better than that. Like it's just so dumb. So dumb. Oh, it might rain tomorrow, so we're going to shorten the race. Well, like, so, you know, so I'm not going to get started on that soapbox because I have so many thoughts there. But that turned me off on Goofy 2025. I could probably still be convinced, but I think I've closed the door on that one. So maybe Goofy 2030, you know, because that'll be another 10-year anniversary. So maybe we'll try it then. Maybe we'll do a different marathon on a charity bib before then. I don't know, but I would absolutely do it again. I am pro charity running for sure. Thanks for the questions. Next up. It is time once again for the Tom Trifecta from Western New York. Mr. Tom Rankin, Chip chiming in. First question from Tom. Probably the most important question of the year when you're getting ready to go running. Are you either A, sock, sock, shoe, shoe, or B, sock, shoe, sock, shoe? Tom, I can honestly tell you, I don't know. I have never thought about this. Since seeing your question, I've tried to think about it, yet when I've put my shoes on, I've not paid attention to it because I'm usually still half asleep and not paying attention to much of anything at that hour. I think I'm sock, shoe, sock, shoe. In fact, I'm pretty sure I'm sock, shoe, but I cannot verify that with 100% certainty. But I will say probably 85%, I think. Not 85% of the time. It's all of the time, one or the other. But I'm about 85% sure that I'm sock, shoe, sock, shoe. And I'm 100% sure that I'm not going to think about it ever again after this question, which means that we're just going to have to deal with an 85% certainty that that is the answer from here on out. But I don't know. And I don't care. Next up from Tom. I am contemplating running a 5,000-meter race on the track this summer. This is an open event for all runners and will include multiple heats to group runners into similar paces. I want to try something different. Do you think wearing spikes would give me any noticeable assistance? In a word, no. In another word, maybe. But I think this is one of those where you got to play the risk-reward game, Tom. And I think whatever little bit of assistance that you might get out of it, which I don't think we'd be talking about seconds. Like I think it might be, you know, very, very, very minimally a fraction of a second difference. But I think that the way that just, you know, the way that the spikes fit, the difference in this type of shoe that it would be. I mean, I would assume you'd train a little bit on the track with your spikes. You wouldn't just show up on race day to wear them. But even then, you know, like, those shoes are markedly different than whatever trainers that you normally wear, right? And so I think the risk of, you know, various stress issues, whether it's bone stress, ligament stress, tendon stress, muscle stress, I think you're poking the potential injury bear by introducing spikes for a race on the track for very little benefit, right? Like I just don't see, sure, they're going to be lighter. So maybe you are talking a 2-second difference. And if the 2 seconds on the track really matters to you, then maybe it's worth it. For me, zero chance I'd wear the spikes. Now I might go with a real minimal shoe. Like I might go with like a zero or, you know, something like that. That's like really flimsy, really, really small. But for me, that wouldn't be dramatically out of the realm of something that I'd be used to wearing anyway. But yeah, I mean, I don't see the risk reward being a ratio that makes any sort of sense to mess with. You know, if you want to try something different, I mean, I feel like just running a 5K on the track would be trying something different. Let that be your difference, and then just wear your normal, you know, road running shoes. If you want to go with something that's a little bit more minimal than what, you know, if you normally would wear something that's got a fairly, you know, moderate to heavier level of stack, maybe you go with a little bit thinner profile shoe, since the track is going to be a little bit spongier, right? You're going to have a little extra give there. But with all due respect, I don't think it's going to make any noticeable difference in your performance to go with the spikes, Tom. And I'd hate to, I don't want to wish any bad juju on you, but I just feel like the injury risk is going to be heightened for what? So it doesn't make sense to me. Doesn't mean you can't do it. Doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. But I would say don't bother. Don't bother. Last but not least, from Tom, I listened to your recent quick tip about older runners. I'm 57 and fit squarely into your audience for that particular podcast. I definitely need more recovery time than I did 10, 20, or 30 years ago. I mostly feel okay about what I can do at this age, but sometimes I get frustrated when I think about what I used to be able to do. Do you have any more insight on the topic? So I was thinking about this one, and I think that maybe, and I don't think I mentioned this before, in that particular episode, I believe it was episode 1231, maybe it was 1230. I should probably have these notes sorted, but you can just scroll back in your feed if you missed that one. Anybody, and you want to listen to some thoughts on racing while still at a little bit older, you know, as you get older, still racing hard. I don't think that you can't still do that. But you know, just thinking about, as we all continue to get older, right? We're all older today than we were yesterday, and good Lord willing, we'll all be older tomorrow than we are today. And I think that so often the conventional wisdom in running is to not compare yourself to others, right? Comparison is the thief of joy. And especially when it comes to running, and you look at things and you feel like you're running as hard as you can and training well and recovering well and strength training and sleeping and doing all the little things and this and that and the other. And you know, how come I can only run, you know, whatever, I can only run a 4 hour and 20 minute marathon, and somebody else who's half-assed and everything, and they can go out and run 3:30, you know, like what the hell? But like, you don't know their history, you don't know the background. So that's where we try to compare ourselves to ourselves and always competing against ourselves, things of that nature. But I could see a situation. And I know that you're still running incredibly well, Tom, you know, not just for a 57-year-old, you're running incredibly well. You're having some really good marathon success over the last few years. You're, you know, wanting to run 5K on the track for some God knows why reason. But I think that if you start to find yourself struggling a little bit about, you know, comparing to where you used to be, you know, comparing, especially, you know, when we're in our 50s and our 60s, not that I know anything about being there, but eventually, hopefully I will, you know, I think there's a very real possibility that I'll be wishing I was running as well as I could at 40 and at 35 and things like that, or at least being able to recover or bounce back or whatever the case might be. I think maybe one thing that could be helpful, and this kind of sounds bad, but I mean it in a good-natured way, not in a bad-natured way. But compare, like, instead of, you know, again, conventional wisdom, don't compare yourself to others. I'm going to say turn that on your head. When you start to struggle with comparing yourself to younger you, maybe compare yourself to others, but not other runners, just other people that are about in your same age demographic. And again, I don't mean this in any sort of bad way, but like, I could see a scenario, and hopefully I'm missing the boat on this a little bit, Tom, but I could see a scenario where you're like, God, you know, like, I'm slower than I was, you know, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, whatever. My recovery time is longer. And you kind of start feeling down about the state of your physical health at 57 years old. Right. But like, how many 57 year olds in the general population, not in the running population, in the general population are healthier than I don't want to say healthier, but I guess I kind of do, are physically healthier than you, that are running as many miles as you run, that are, you know, traveling to Japan to run a race, that are knocking up marathon majors, that have qualified for Boston in the last couple of years, things of that nature. you know, I think sometimes we get in our running silo and we're comparing ourselves to different runners, and that's a struggle. And then, you know, oh, I'm going to compare myself to myself, but now I'm older and things aren't working as well. But like, you know, maybe in terms of the general population, like what you're achieving at 57, you know, what I'm achieving at 42, what somebody else is achieving at 63, in the general population, you know, again, I hate to, I don't want to be that guy, but like, just look around, right? We're doing pretty good. We're doing pretty good. Maybe we're not doing as well as we used to do in terms of our own fitness or, you know, just age related or whatever. But sometimes just kind of taking that broader view, you know, how many folks that are in their late 50s are on, and I don't know your situation, Tom. And again, I'm not trying to be negative, but just like a way to see the positive, you know, they're on a half a dozen different medications for high blood pressure and for this and for that and for this and for that. And your medication of choice is 6 miles in the morning, right? People that are achy and you struggle to get up off of a chair and they're walking with a gimp and things like that because they've been inactive for the last 25 years. And maybe you're a little bit of stiff and sore when you get up and after you've been sitting at the desk for a while or things of that nature. But it's not because you've been inactive for the last 20 years. It's because you freaking knocked out 18 miles last weekend, right? And so, yeah, you're a little bit sore from that. But it's like I'm using my body and pushing my body sore, not inactivity sore. So, you know, I think that again, that could be one of those things that could go negative real quickly. And I'm not encouraging you to go the negative route. But sure, you might not be able to do what you could physically when you were in your 40s and in your 30s and in your 20s. But for a 57-year-old man, Tom, with all due respect, I mean, what are you in the top 1% of Americans that are 57, you know, in terms of health and fitness and what your activity level is? Top 3%, top 0.5%, you know, whatever it is, you're in pretty rarefied air. And anybody listening to this is probably in pretty rarefied air for their, you know, just their age demographics, because we're active, we're runners, like we're trying to, you know, like we're trying, right? And so if you get down on yourself because you're getting older, I think maybe just kind of looking a little bit broader outside of some running circles, hopefully that might could help you feel a little bit better about what you're still able to do, what you're still striving to do. I don't know. I hope that makes sense, and I hope it doesn't come across in a negative way. So yeah, thanks for the questions, Tom. And if I offended a bunch of folks, again, it wasn't my intent. Please give me some grace. But yeah, thanks for the questions, Tom. Next up from Kelly, suggestions for transitioning to zero drop shoes. And then there's a whole long situation and obviously some struggles, Kelly, but, I'm going to skip you wrote a lot, which is fine. I just don't think it really just comes back to the question. How do you transition to zero drop running shoes? And I think that ultimately, transition is the right way of saying it, right? So when I made the transition, I was running, I can't remember, I think I was using a New Balance or an ASIC, something like that. Kind of one of your standard clunky shoes, that had like a 10 or a 12 millimeter drop, right? And I transitioned to a Brooks that had like a 4 millimeter drop. And that was a little bit of a shock. It put some tension on my calf and my Achilles, not in a bad way, but just, they were tight. They were sore. They were absorbing the extra stress. And after, you know, several months of running in the 4 millimeter drops, and I transitioned to the ultras that were zero drop and moved forward from there. So I think that's the key. And the good news is that these days there's a lot of options. And you mentioned in your post about the Ultra Forward, which, you know, it hurts my heart that Ultra made a shoe that's a 4 millimeter drop, because it just kind of goes against what they've stood for forever. But it's a great transition option for somebody that wants to get into ultras and zero drop running. But maybe going straight to zero drop is too much too quickly. So yeah, if you know, a shoe like that could be great because it gives you that transitional period. And again, these days there's so many different shoe models out there that have different profiles. Obviously there's plenty that are still, you know, 10 millimeter drop, 12 millimeter drop. The good news is that it's not hard to find that information anymore. You know, 10 years ago or maybe 12 years ago, nobody was really talking about drop. you know, so you really kind of look for that information. You had to really go out of your way to try to figure out, is this an 8 or is it a 10 or is it a 12 or is it a 6? I don't know. Now, like every shoe has the drop listed. So you can find something that helps you transition down. And if you ever get to zero drop, great. If you find that, you know, 2 millimeter or 4 millimeter seems to really work for you, That's great too. So ultimately it's whatever works for you. But again, in the whole context of your question, Kelly, sounds like zero drop will work for you. You just need a little bit of patience to get there. You know, certainly stretching your calves, massaging your calves with the foam roller, doing some toe raises, some eccentric toes, you know, eccentric calf work, can all help, you know, strengthen your calfs, because your calves do take a beating, but they take more stress when you have a zero drop versus when you have a shoe with a little bit more heel underneath it. So doing some of that proactively will help. And then just ease into it, which is what it sounds like you're doing. So I really feel like you're on the right track. Stretch your calves, massage your calves, heel walks, toe walks, where you're just walking, you know, up and down the hallway in your house a couple times, up on your tiptoes, then pulling your toes up off the ground, walking just on your heels to just help strengthen some of those little muscles in there. Some toe yoga, that's always a good thing. But I feel like you're on the right track, and if zero drop is working for you, that's awesome. If four millimeters is working for you, awesome. But just go slow, go easy, and hopefully you'll find the right shoe that's working for you. And if you have further questions, let me know. We can certainly talk more about it. But thanks for the question, Kelly, and good luck on the process. And glad that the comeback from injury seems to be going well. Last but not least, we've got a hat trick from the man, the myth, the legend that is Gary Joe Collins. First up from GJC, percussive massage guns. Do you recommend them? Use them at your own peril? It depends. Chug a lug? No, it doesn't. Well, I mean, I guess ultimately the answer is that it depends. So when it comes to massage tools, I know I talk about foam rolling a lot, but I kind of use foam rolling as a catch-all for any type of massage work, right? There's the foam roller, there's the lacrosse ball, there's the stick, there's the massage guns, there's, you know, just an actual physical massage. Those are all kind of soft tissue recovery tools, soft tissue devices, if you will. And they all have their benefits. They all have their things that are helpful, that they work really well on. And they all have their shortcomings. And the massage gun is no different. There are some body parts where I think the massage gun is great. I think it's good for kind of Achilles tendon. I think it can be good for kind of some calf, like a real tough muscle, like your calves, to kind of loosen those up a little bit. They don't work real well for like bigger muscles, so the calf is even questionable. But if you have like a real tight spot in your calf, it can work good there. But to like try to massage your whole calf with the massage gun, tedious. So that's where maybe a foam roller is better, or the stick is better. If you have something real deep down in your hip, like even if you're just like jacking the massage gun up to jackhammer level strength, like it's got to get through a lot of tissue. So maybe that's where something like the lacrosse ball is better, because you can really sit on it and kind of grind down and move your hip around to open up the tissue to really get down in there. They all have their benefits. They all have their strengths. They all have their weaknesses. And the massage gun is no different. I think that if you're in the market originally, I think that the best place to start is the foam roller, because it's maybe the cheapest. It's the lowest barrier to entry. You can do a lot with it, but it's not perfect, you know. But then as you go from there, maybe you add some massage ball. If you find a good deal, like I got a good, you know, Amazon Prime Day deal on a massage gun last year. I like it. I use it once in a while. It's not on my everyday rotation. I think it's good, but you know, there are certain things it seems to work better for. Obviously it's good for mobile, you know, like as far as mobility, you can bring it in your car with you if you're on a work trip or you're going to the in-laws for the weekend or whatever. Maybe it's a little bit less awkward to pack than a foam roller. So, I mean, yeah, there's benefits to it. It works. Is it the end all be all? Is it the second coming of massage tools? No, probably not. Probably not. I think it's like any other specialty tool, right? Like you start out with a regular, you know, flathead screwdriver and a Phillips screwdriver. And then eventually you're like, all right, well, maybe I need a couple of bigger ones for some bigger jobs. So you get like a you know, a man's screwdriver, one of those big ones, right? And then eventually you're like, well, you know what? I have some smaller projects that I might need like the jewelry sized screwdrivers with. Well, they're all screwdrivers. They don't all work the same. There's some crossover. You know, sometimes you can use the bigger screwdriver on a smaller screw or vice versa. But sometimes it doesn't work as well. Same thing with why you have six different hammers, right? You got the regular hammer, you got a sledgehammer, you got a mallet, you got a ball peen hammer. Could one hammer do all the tricks? I mean, most of them, but there's certainly instances where, the rubber mallet is better than the hand sledge, right? And it's the same thing with the massage tools. You could kind of get away with just a foam roller. You could kind of get away with just a massage gun. But there's sometimes that the foam roller is better than the massage gun. There's sometimes that the lacrosse ball is better than both of them. So if you're looking to add to your arsenal, I say do it. If you think it's going to be replacing every other tool you have, not so much. Not so much. Next up, second question. From your experience, does one have to be off before they notice a loss in fitness? I assume that you're meaning like take a break from running. You know, if you don't run for a couple of weeks, is that what it takes to realize a loss of fitness? I mean, yeah, probably. Unless you really have a dip where all of a sudden you're like, God, I can't even, you know, walk to the mailbox. I can't even walk up a flight of steps. I'm not sure I completely understand your question, my friend, although I think that's what we're talking about. Just, you know, yeah, like you build the fitness, and then if you don't use it, you start to lose it. So there's no question, but you don't really notice it until you start to get back into things, right? Unless it really starts to dip. But you know, it's a natural ebb and flow. What is lost can be found again. And quite frankly, when we're talking about fitness, in general, it tends to come back quicker than it took to build originally. But it also doesn't tend to come back as quickly as we ever want it to, right? So you got to be patient. You got to, you know, if you haven't run for a while, you haven't been to the gym for a while to do some strength, or you haven't done some yoga in a while, you're probably not as flexible. You're probably not as strong. Your aerobic fitness maybe has taken a dip. It'll come back, but you know, we got to get back to working at it and got to get back to some consistency. Probably have to dial things back a little bit in terms of volume or intensity or things like that to allow your body to readapt. But you get back into a good groove, and you'll get your lost fitness back relatively quickly. Last but not least, total nonsense. Any thoughts on Scotty Scheffler kicking the snot out of everybody and winning another green jacket? Yeah, I mean, not really. So, you know, we live now just outside of Augusta, which is the home of Augusta National, which is the home of the Masters, which is what we're talking about there for those that don't speak golf. And it's like a big deal around here. Like not so much like right here where we are. Like you could totally not have any idea that the Masters was happening in our neighborhood and be fine with it. Except like it's bananas how like it's like such a status symbol around here. At least it seems like it. That's what it feels like as still an outsider looking in. Our Facebook group is flooded with people that are like, I went there and I got a sweatshirt. Does anybody want one? $80. And I'm like, I don't need a freaking $80 sweatshirt that says Augusta National on it. Like, no, that's stupid. But people buy it. Like, they just arbitrage the stuff, whatever. No, I mean, whatever. Capitalism, right? It's a beautiful thing. But I didn't watch 1 second of the Masters. And 10 years ago, 15 years ago, Diz would have thought that's absurd. That, like, the Masters would come and go, and I wouldn't watch a second of it. I wouldn't tune into a tradition unlike any other. I don't even know. I know he's a good golfer, Scotty Scheffler, but I mean, there was a time, you know, 15 years ago when like I would recognize the top 50 golfers, just, you know, just a picture. I'm like, oh, that's whoever, right? I could see their swing, right? And not just like Jim Furyk, but like I could see Justin Leonard's swing and be like, oh, that was Justin Leonard's shot there. Oh, that was Sergio. You know, that was, of course, that's Tiger, you know, whatever. There's Phil. Just from watching him swing, right? Now you could put Scotty Scheffler on there, just full on front face. And I'd have no idea. I wouldn't know him from Adam, right? So yeah, I mean, I guess he played well, but I don't even know. Did he run away with it? Did he not? Whatever. I don't know. So yeah, I guess my days of being a golf fan are more or less over. Like, I'll probably watch the Ryder Cup. Is it a Ryder Cup year? Or is it a President's Cup year? I don't know. Maybe I'll watch the Ryder Cup. But I don't even know who's in there. I don't even know who's American versus who's European anymore. Pathetic. So I guess that's my thoughts on Scottie Scheffler. There's nothing about Scottie Scheffler, just me. My knowledge of the game of golf has eroded. It's kind of gone the way of Tiger's back, I guess. Anyway, not as good as it used to be, in case we're not catching that reference. So there you go, Gary Joe. Sorry to disappoint. But I don't follow golf as close as I used to, clearly. Anyway, there's that. So that's it. And that is that. As a matter of fact, that's the final question for this month. Look at us, an hour and 5 minutes? Who even are we? Y'all are slacking. It's springtime. People are outside. People are not on Facebook. They're not asking questions. And I'm going to probably, eat those words next month when there's 47 questions and this is a 4-hour episode. But we'll cross that bridge when we get there. Until then, thanks to everybody for chiming in this month, for offering your questions. And again, if you're new around these parts, join the Facebook group. We have some fun in there. There's usually a bit of nonsense. And then there's the question post. You ask your questions in the comments. I answer them, in the episode. Real easy peasy. Dizruns.com/Facebook is the link, or just search for the Dizruns tribe. Come join the party. Speaking of parties, join the Magic Mind party. Get yourself a little shot of Magic Mind every day or every couple days. Whenever you need a little extra boost of focus, a little extra boost of energy, get some stuff done. Get your mind right. MagicMind.com/DizRuns is the link. DizRuns20 at checkout. Save you 20% on your purchase. And you can stack that 20% on top of any subscription discount, up to a 56% discount on the fancy level subscription. So check it out if you're so inclined. You want to get locked in mentally for your runs. You want to get locked in mentally for your just productivity on a daily, day-to-day basis. MagicMind.com/DizRuns. And with that, we'll go ahead and wrap this one up, y'all. Thanks for the time. Thanks for the attention. What'd you think? Comments, questions, concerns, at DizRuns on the social medias, DizRuns@gmail.com. DizRuns.com/1234. 1234. Get you back to the show notes for today. Memes, GIFs, as per usual. Comment section down there at the bottom. And with that, what do you say we do this again next month? I say we do this again next month. We'll be back before then. We'll be back with some quick tips. We'll be back with an interview or two. We'll be back with another Q&A episode next month. But until we do this again, somewhere in the next 7 days, be well. Take good care. Thanks again for listening. And we'll talk soon, right? Later, y'all.